Because I spent decades worrying about something that never happened.
So that was really freeing for you then, wasn't it?
Very. So much time worrying about things that never happen. Over 90, I think it's 95% of the things we worry about never, ever, ever happen.
Welcome to Mindset Reinvented. I'm Jack Trauma. Join me each week as we explore emotional well-being, relationships, health, and prosperity. Get ready to thrive. Mark Twain once said, "The two most important days in your life are the day that you're born and the day you find out why." Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Phyllis Ginsberg to the show. With over 30 years of experience as a therapist, a coach, and an international best-selling author, Phyllis has dedicated her life to helping people move from merely surviving to truly thriving. And Phyllis's journey is a testament to the power of overcoming personal challenges. Her books, including Empowered You and Brain Makeover, offer practical guidance for living a happier and healthier life. And she draws from professional and personal experiences where she helps people break free from limiting beliefs to unlock their fullest potential. Phyllis, it is an absolute honor to have you here today.
Thank you. I am so looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. Me too. So let's dive right in. I'm going to take you back just a little bit because I read that you almost quit public speaking and you were in a class and you almost quit it twice. How did you push through those fears back then to become the confident speaker that you are today and one of the best-selling authors out there today?
So that was about 12 years ago now, I think. I was in a speaker training class. I had written my book, Brain Makeover, getting ready to put it out there into the world. And I knew if anybody was going to know it existed, I had to let them know. And so I thought, I need some speaker training. I was comparing myself to other people with theater experience. They could memorize lines like nothing. I couldn't even remember two sets. And yes, I almost quit twice. But there's like three things that really got me through this and to help me overcome the doubts and the fears and the negative self-talk. I can't, I'm never going to get this. Like, what am I doing? The first is I had a really strong desire, you might say. I knew I was on a mission. I didn't know what it would be. I had no idea I'd be doing what I'm doing now and that this would be my path. But I had an inkling, more than an inkling, that I was here to help transform the way people think, to get them out of survival thinking. And that theme and thread has definitely come through. The other piece is I had to give up perfectionism. I could write things word for word, and I wanted to say them exactly the way I wrote them, and I just couldn't for the life of me, which meant that I had to develop not only my messaging, which came with practice and figuring out who I'm speaking to and what is it health, is it happiness, is it business? I could do any of those. All of my material applies to any aspects of life, but I couldn't pull together the perfect sentences, and that was mind-boggling to me. So what ultimately I had to do was learn to trust myself and trust that I would know what to say because I knew my material and I knew what I was doing and I knew my audience and where I was going. And the biggest thing, I got one, this is the piece that really opened up the whole thing for me, was I created a chart. I used to talk about having a fearful path of thinking and a happy path. And so I created this chart. Here's what happens when you're on the happy path, and here's what happens when you're on the fear path. And as soon as I had my chart and it had my four boxes in each, I was off to the races.
I could imagine. I want to come back to the chart here in a moment, but you talked about perfectionism, and I think that a lot of us struggle with wanting to be perfect, and there's no such thing as perfectionism, and we both know that, but avoiding being judged or looked at a certain way, so we over-engineer what we might say to somebody or to a group. You hit on a key point where you said to yourself, I need to trust myself and know that I'm here for a reason. People are listening to me for a reason. And I've got to trust myself to deliver what I feel is coming from within. Would you recommend to somebody that's struggling with perfectionism? Is it just trusting yourself, or is there another element to that that people should consider?
I think that this whole perfectionism thing that most of us were brought up with has to do with the rules that we grew up with, the really high expectations that were unattainable. We set ourselves up for disappointment and failure every day, every time that we think that we have to be above and beyond perfect. No, we're human. And yeah, no one wants to fail or disappoint themselves or disappoint other people. But things flow a whole lot better when we don't have the pressure. Perfectionism is ingrained in us. And once you realize the pressure you put on yourself trying to be perfect, you could spend hours and hours on a project, or, you know, if I spend 2 or 3 hours on a newsletter, that's not a good use of my time trying to get it to be perfect. At some point, you've got to stop and just get the thing out.
Agreed. I agree with you. I also feel that today, and maybe this problem has existed for a very long time, but I think today it's amplified because of social media, because of all the messages that are being thrown at us. We look at the glamour side of other people's lives. We see them in their best outfits. We see them with smiles on their faces, but we don't understand that they're human beings as well, and they have struggles just like the rest of us. So would you say that social media and the times that we're living in right now adds to that level of complexity as it relates to people wanting to be perfect and seen in the best light?
Yeah, definitely. There is now, with social media, this higher bar. We now know that that exists. So it's in our awareness that, oh, I need to put on my best look. I need to be able to do this at a higher level. But what we often don't take into consideration is that people who are highly successful, who are doing things, even me, for example, being able to do what I'm doing, I have spent a decade or more now honing my skills, having mentors and trainers and coaches. And I didn't just wake up one day and here I am able to articulate myself to the best of my ability without notes. It was a progression. And I think that as adults, we don't have to go through that learning curve because it's painful. Who wants to feel incompetent?
That's a really valid point. And I agree with you. And I think that in order to effectuate change in our lives, we've got to be willing to do the work. Some people don't know what work needs to be done. And I think that some people that do know what work needs to be done do not make the time and the conscious decision to dig in. And you know better than anybody, it might mean taking an inventory of the way we feel so that we can ascertain whether those feelings are valid or not. What are your thoughts around that?
So as somebody who is more of a thinker than a feeler, I like to work with the thoughts. Feelings can give us information. And I think that every feeling that we have can be valid for our own experience. So I don't like to discount where people are with their feelings. But a lot of our feelings stem from thoughts that we were programmed with. Thoughts about ourselves that aren't true about ourselves, that we aren't worthy or deserving, or that we don't have what it takes, or that we're not good at something. All of that was programmed, and then it becomes ingrained in us through experiences that validate, oh, I'm not good at math. I can't balance my checkbook. I need a calculator. But what does that say? Does that mean that you can't learn how to do basic math, or that you can't learn how to do something with numbers and manage your finances? No. It might mean that you have a belief about yourself and a new perspective. I have to say, it doesn't always take a lot of work or a lot of time to change, because one new perspective can flip things. One thing that someone says, a light bulb moment, and you got it.
Sure, absolutely. And I wonder, through your own practice, when you counsel your clients, how do you help them identify these limiting beliefs? And then what steps do they take, or that you advise them to take, in being able to process those and do something with them?
To me, it's really obvious. Like, I have this gift of being able to identify patterns. So I can see when someone's struggling with something, or they just give me a couple of sentences, and somehow I know there's this pattern that's running in the background. Once it's identified, then it's a matter of being able to look at either how it got originated, which really doesn't matter in the scheme of things, whether it has to do with subconsciously you're trying to keep yourself safe from something, such as I work with a lot of women who they would like to lose some weight, but they have acknowledged they feel safer in a bigger body, right? So you can imagine past traumas, past whether it was abuse or just being told you're not pretty, you're not this, you're not that. They've lived up to what they were told about themselves, or they're in self-protective mode. And so looking at it from those different perspectives gives me an opportunity to now say, you have some choices to make. Is your health more important than this perceived need for safety? You're not a helpless young woman anymore. You're not a child anymore. You're an adult. You have the ability to walk away. You have the ability to do other things other than just seal yourself off with armor.
It's really taking a look at that with a magnifying glass. And like you said, I think it's important to make a decision. What's carrying more weight in your life? And I think in your 40s, if if I recollect, you had a light bulb moment about health anxiety. Can you describe that moment and how it shaped your approach to life?
In my 40s, I realized that all the years that I spent from the time my mom passed away at 37, and she had suffered with arthritis, migraine headaches, eventually got breast cancer, passed away. I was only 15. I didn't trust doctors. I was in fear of going down that same road of getting some horrendous illness, suffering and dying young. And so every time I'd go for a mammogram or I'd have some lump or bump or something didn't feel right, I would be in a panic. I would freak out. And while I was not totally consciously aware of this fear, it was running strongly, at least for the most part. And by the time that I was in my 40s, I'd passed that age when my mom had already passed. And I realized I eat well, I take care of myself, I'm doing everything I can. I went to a doctor. I was actually referred to a surgeon because I had some lump. And the doctor said, this is nothing. You don't need to worry. You're doing everything you can. And that helped me put things in a new perspective, that I didn't have to be coming from fear, because I was doing everything that I knew how to do and all the cutting edge stuff. And I started applying that to other areas of my life and saying to myself, I'm not going to stress over this. I'm not going to worry about it. If something happens, I'll deal with it. Because I spent decades worrying about something that never happened.
So that was really freeing for you then, wasn't it?
Very. So much time worrying about things that never happen. Over 90, I think it's 95% of the things we worry about never, ever, ever happen.
Amen to that. And I don't know what the number of thoughts that we have in our minds on a day-to-day basis, a high percentage of those thoughts are really not serving us very well, are they?
The research I've seen, we have about 60,000 thoughts a day. They're the same thoughts day in and day out, and about 85% are negative. So we really have to either become aware of our thoughts and our self-talk and shift that. Otherwise, you know, subconsciously, that all runs in the background to keep us safe, to protect us. And they're also from our conditioning.
I think a lot of us carry what I would call old school mindsets from childhood and early upbringing. What are some of the common limiting beliefs that you encounter in your practice? And in terms of people breaking free from those, what do you typically see? And I know everybody's different, everybody's situation is different, but what do you typically see in terms of what that trajectory might look like before people start feeling some relief?
I have an attorney I work with who has self-confidence issues that started in childhood. There's lots of people that I work with, men and women, that it's not okay to sit still. It's not okay to not be productive. It's also not okay to attract attention to yourself. So self-care is a huge piece of the human experience. If we don't take care of ourselves, or we don't have a framework for maybe going to bed at a reasonable time, eating well, drinking enough water, getting some movement, having some healthy connections with other people. There's a whole array of things that you can choose that will enrich your life and actually extend your life to have a higher quality of life. When we start getting into our older years, I have a lot of people in their 60s, 70s, even 80s that I've worked with that they don't have a frame of reference for self-care. And as their health declines, now it's like, well, I can't put that attention on myself. I can't give myself the time. That's when it becomes a huge problem.
It's like a snowball going down a hill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, isn't it?
Yeah. And you don't, it's like you didn't create neural pathways in your brain that says, I am worth taking care of. I am worth sitting for, you know, even 10 or 20 minutes in stillness or silence or quiet, just in nature, meditating or listening to music or reading or doing something that's calm. We tend to run on super high stress. And in this day and age, the amount of sugar and caffeine and things that we ingest to get ourselves going in the morning, and then it could be, you know, the wine or some alcohol or something to get us to calm down to sleep. The amount of self-medicating is incredible.
I would just like to acknowledge to anybody that's listening to this is that I am the first to admit that life is hard. Life is not easy for a lot of us. And like what you said, if we're going a mile a minute and we're focused on that mile or minute type activity, we're missing something. We're forgetting about something. And maybe it's our health. Maybe we're not hydrated for the day. Maybe we didn't get enough nutrition. Maybe we were really short and curt with somebody that we love and care for, and it sets up their day to not being fulfilling or happy for them. And so there's just a lot going on in our lives. Going back to your fear versus happiness chart, This is a chart that you mentioned earlier that compares fear and happiness paths. I know you touched upon it earlier, but it's worth to bring back into the conversation if you can explain how the tool works, and then if you can share an example of how it actually helps someone overcome a specific challenge.
So most of us are on the fear path, and it's not our fault. Our brain was designed for survival. And up until not that long ago, we really did need that. But today, survival thinking is stressful. So when we have fears and worries, it produces stress. We often will be in the fight or flight response where we're now cascading stress hormones. The brain now gives a signal to the amygdala and your body's producing stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol. You're in high stress and reactive mode. You cannot think clearly. Blood flow does not go to your brain for memory access and clear thinking. It is all about survival. Most of us go through our day. We're probably sitting at home on Zoom, right? Or we're looking at an email or something. But we can have spikes, this stress response, just by opening our email and seeing there's an email from my boss, if you have one, my ex, if you have one, or my doctor, if you've had some kind of medical situation.
Triggering something in you.
Right? Yeah. You don't even have to open the email and you're already in the stress response.
We can subject line only.
Right? We can manufacture all of the symptoms, the physical symptoms of anxiety just by thinking. Thought alone will produce it. Yeah. That's how powerful our minds are. And so when we're in reactive mode, we don't have the ability to think things through. But when we are on the happy path, when we have a thought that makes us happy, I want to say, if you've got a thought that's one of curiosity, one of possibility, or even a neutral thought, you are miles ahead of being in survival thinking. And what that does is allows you to have some stillness, the ability to feel good hormones like dopamine, serotonin. With those, now you have the ability to access intuition, guidance, clear thinking, discernment, and decide what you want to act on. So instead of being in reactive mode, you are now able to take action from a place of knowing what's right for you, or asking the right questions, pursuing something from a whole different perspective. It's not this, I gotta get it or else. It's, okay, we're doing this because this is the right path. Yeah. Totally different energy, different feel, and different outcome.
That's super powerful. I think meditation is incredibly important. I've had some experience with meditation, but I haven't made it a lifelong pursuit. But I had an experience sitting in a room with 12 other folks, and for 8 hours, we didn't say a word to one another, and we sat in a circle. We broke for lunch, but we never spoke to each other at all. It was one of the most challenging things I've ever done, and the whole purpose behind it was for you to sit with your thoughts and to let them shower you so that you can feel the emotion that these thoughts are bringing into your psyche, and then realize which ones are not valid and which ones are valid, and dismiss the ones that aren't and hang on to the ones that aren't. And for the first hour or two, I was so uncomfortable because I had all these things coming into my brain and I was like, oh my goodness, am I really thinking about this? Like, is this really how I feel about myself? And it got easier and easier during that session to be able to understand myself a little bit better. The point of that is we don't spend time thinking through these things that are going on in our minds that we can spend some equal amount of time dismissing and getting rid of. So I'm a student of it all, evolving just like the rest of us. And in your book, when you talk about rewiring negative thought, and I think you do that in Brain Makeover, aside from somebody reading that book, which by the way, guys, you should read that book, what would be a key takeaway right now that anybody could start today to shift their self-talk in a more positive direction?
I think what you talked about in that silent meditation for a day, that the emphasis is on going inward. And so if we can go inward, and Brain Makeover has 52 weekly readings that are like 2 or 3 pages long that will give you one thing to focus on, whether it's a new perspective, a new thought, different ways of talking to ourselves, self-talk. You can choose an affirmation. You can choose to have compassion for yourself. You can reassure yourself. There's so many things. I call it a mantra of, I am okay in this very moment. Right now, I have everything I need. And that is calming. And if we can do things like that to remind ourselves from the inner, because we're never going to get what we need out there. We think we are, but we're not.
Amen to that. I agree. Yet we're always seeking validation outside of ourselves. That's the default mechanism for most of us.
Right. Because when we were growing up, we needed that mere reflected back to us that we were okay. And by default, little children are messy. They don't know very much. They make a lot of mistakes. They fall down. They get dirty. They create a mess. And what did we get reflected back? Not a lot of compassion, not a lot of it's okay. Mm-hmm. And so as an adult, that continues until we can give it to ourselves and say, it's okay. All right, I blew it. It's okay. I will learn from this. I spilled something. It's okay. I'll clean it up. It's not a big deal. But we often have to almost reparent ourselves and talk to ourselves in a way that reassures the younger part of us that didn't get that. And we basically, that was a huge path for me. I had to give myself what I didn't get in childhood because my parents didn't have it to give, mm-hmm. as most parents don't.
And we have to learn not to resent our parents. They worked with what they had at the time. And I think that a lot of us grow up, some of us resent that, and we really need to take a look at that. It's not their fault.
Right. It is not their fault. They didn't have what their parents didn't give them. And I saw that so clearly with both of my parents that, okay, I am the adult. I'm responsible for my life. I want to improve it. That's my choice. And I do it or I don't.
And there's something else that I'm really curious about, which is a good segue to share with our friends of the show, is that you use emotional freedom techniques, EFT, in your practice. And for those that are unfamiliar, could you briefly explain what EFT is and how it works? And then to follow that up, can you share a success story where it actually made a significant impact with either yourself or a client?
Sure. So the emotional freedom technique, or EFT tapping, is tapping on meridian points. For those of you on video, you'll see I'm demonstrating, just tapping on the side of the eyebrow closest to the nose and then the next the side of the eye. And you're just doing this gentle tapping. These are meridian points, part of Chinese medicine that's been around for thousands of years. And it frees stored emotions in the body. It will actually calm the amygdala in the brain, that fight or flight response. And recently, research shows that it rewires the brain. So there's all these positive benefits. I actually knew Roger Callahan, who pioneered this for psychologists, and it was available for mental health professionals as thought field therapy way before it became EFT tapping. So we're going back 25 years ago. Every single day, I work with people. I have a community we've been gathering 3 times a month for over 7 years. And so you want success stories? Last night we did tapping for sleep. This is with my group. There's one woman that she says, every time that I come to tapping, I always get a good night's sleep that night.
Really? I'd be very interested in that.
Tapping for self-care. Tapping for the ability to have new perspectives. I like to do this acknowledging what's going on, introduce possibilities, because when I introduce possibilities, we're now installing some new neural pathways. Maybe it doesn't have to be hard. Maybe it doesn't have to be this bad, or maybe that it could be easier. I think as humans, we make things way too harder than they have to be, because most of us got the message, if you don't work hard, you're not going to get anywhere, or it takes hard work. And I'm going to say, if you're inspired, it's not hard work, because you're drawn to it. You want to do it. It might take some effort, yes, but that's different than it's hard and I barely can make it and I'm like climbing up the hill. Like, that's hard and I don't do hard. I'll do the work. I'm happy to work, but I'm not happy to swim upstream because I'm not a salmon.
Good analogy. From my perspective, it's interesting that you say that, because sometimes we just need to get out of our own way, get out of our own heads, which is what I think EFT techniques will do for people, because it's more a physical stimulus that you get. Anytime that I found my mind becoming stuck and I was not in the mindset of looking at it from a thought perspective, I spent any time that I can get hiking the trails. It really just put a different perspective on things. And the stimulus around me just made it feel so great that I had a new, renewed approach to the day.
I have a whole section in my book, Empowered You, on how to shift thoughts and feelings. And so you can replace thoughts with, let's say, the opposite of what you're thinking. So if you're thinking like, I can't do this, you can tell yourself, I can do this. And how can I do this differently? What else is possible? So those are some things that you can do different for that. And as far as changing thoughts and feelings, you can listen to music, watch a movie, do Qigong, like any kind of movement, get out in nature, put your focus on something else. What we really want to do is interrupt the patterns that when we're on autopilot, because almost everything, like 95% of what we do throughout our whole day, is autopilot. So we have to purposely choose to put on inspiring music, or even playing games on your phone can interrupt a pattern of, you know, angst that we have. Like, I got to figure this out. No, let it rest. Come back to it with fresh eyes. You will see something that you didn't see before. You'll come up with a new idea.
I think the phrase that brings a bell to me that you used is a pattern interrupt. And I think that's what's needed sometimes to interrupt those habitual thoughts or patterns that are not making us feel very good. We're living in different times than we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And you've been a veteran in mental health for a number of those years. What challenges do you foresee for mental health in the coming years?
The challenges we're facing today: increased depression, anxiety, suicide rates, addictions, they're here. And I'm excited for the future because we have these modalities in energy psychology, like EFT tapping. There's a shift from focusing on the problem and giving people a diagnosis, that whether it's depression or older, whatever that you're in, like you're branded with this diagnosis. I have seen so much of what people suffer from based on traumatic experiences, the thinking that they acquired from their conditioning growing up. There are so many people on the path doing things like I'm doing. It's like an army of people providing new perspectives on mental health care. And to me, that's really exciting.
For sure. No, it is. It really is. And it comes from a place of truth and serving others. And I'm very drawn to the space and trying to share all this wisdom with the world. Phyllis Ginsberg, everyone. Phyllis Ginsberg, we are so thrilled that you're here. Thank you very much for coming on to the show and sharing some of your insights with us. And again, I am inspired by you. I'd love to have you back on the show if you're open to it in a future episode.
I would love to. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, pleasure's mine. What we're going to do is we're going to have all of the links to your social media pages so that people can understand how to find you, purchase your books if that's what they desire to do. We'll put those links in the show notes so that everyone can learn more about your work. And so thank you again, Phyllis. And thank you to our friends for tuning into Mindset Reinvented. If you have found value today, please pay it forward. Share our show with others who may benefit by listening. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we're going to be joined by a remarkable person. Her name is Julie Holly, who's an investing expert, and she's the founder of Three Keys Investments. And she has 2 decades of experience. She transitioned from being a public school teacher to a multifamily investor to a podcast host. And she's going to be sharing her insights on balancing health, mindset, and wealth, that perfect trifecta to achieve true personal freedom and success. So if you're not on our email list, visit mindsetreinvented.com so you can get notified of our newest episodes. And until then, I appreciate all of you. Keep living your best life. See you soon. If you like this episode of Mindset Reinvented, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps more than you know. Thanks. See you next time.